Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. True and Terrifying Stories, Volume 1, Story Number 1. My pops and I are avid campers. Not professionals anymore, but my dad used to be a wilderness guide for kids. We typically prefer the eastern, western Sierras as they have great car camping spots next to lakes and a lot of great trails. Last summer, we decided to go up for a two-night stay and do some day hiking. The campground was pretty full, not unusual for the summer, but we were lucky enough, I thought at the time, to find a pretty secluded site, and we set up our tents. First night was normal, little bear activity, but we're used to that. Second night, I crawled into my backpacking tent, head and toes hit both ends, it was very small, and I passed out cold until about 3 a.m. when I woke up to the sound of footsteps. My dad is a diabetic and needs to get up to urinate around 3 or 4 times a night, and the sounds were definitely footprints, but they were coming from the wrong direction. We were located next to the bathroom, so the footsteps should be moving in that direction, but they were coming closer to my tent. They stopped about a yard short, and the breathing got very heavy. I first brushed it off as my dad, maybe gotten lost without a flashlight, then the breathing went away. I fell back asleep, only to be woken up a few minutes later to the breathing right above the tent. You know that rush of terror up your spine? I had that. And that wasn't my dad. I laid perfectly still, but the footprints continued to circle the tent. I had the rain fly on, so I couldn't see through the roof, and it was a new moon and pitch black. Now I convinced myself, a heavy sleeper, that I'm dreaming. Just as that thought runs through my head, I felt a single finger run the length of my foot through the tent. Real slow and methodical. Now I figured, I have to be dreaming, because my foot is in my sleeping bag, and I couldn't possibly feel that. But that comfort disappeared quickly when I realized, using the small ambient light available, that my foot was bare and out of the bag. I lay frozen as whatever it was stroked my foot for a minute or two, gave a few more labored breaths, and then just stood above my tent for what felt like an eternity. Before disappearing, I stayed up all that night. In the morning, I heard my dad get out of his tent. I bolted up and met him by the fire. He looked me in the eye and asked if I had gotten up the night before. I asked him the same, and he said he had around 2 a.m. because he thought someone was going through our stuff. As I told him my story, we noticed our gear had been neatly rearranged on the table. Every item. Nothing taken, footprints in a perfect circle around my tent. We still can't even talk about it, even many years later. Story number 2. Driving through the backwoods of eastern Kentucky in the dead of night is the most terrifying thing I've ever done. Anyone who's ever been in the area knows exactly what I'm talking about. All the light from the moon and the stars is blocked by thick vegetation and hills. So it's pitch black. There's history in those hills, a lot of history, and this energy fills the place with this crazy bad vibe. It's like the very land is pissed at you, like it wants you dead. The roads aren't well traveled, and you'll be hard pressed to see a single car driving down them at night. Cell service out there is, at least for me, spotty at best, non-existent at worst, and you pray to whatever you believe in, that your car doesn't break down, knowing full well the folks who live smattered across the hills are isolated, private people, knowing that they wouldn't be very happy seeing you wandering onto their property in the dead of night, none too happy at all. It's what my mom calls bad country, one word. She always told me to avoid the area if I could, saying that I'd be likely to be murdered or worse out there. And I've heard the stories too, stories about people getting out of their car to help a stranded motorist, only to be ambushed, robbed, kidnapped, and or murdered. stories about strange lights and ghost killers and vanishing hitchhikers and crazy inbred hillbilly families. There are said to be hundreds of unreported deaths out there. People just vanishing off the face of the earth, never to be seen again. I've always avoided driving through those hills, but one night I found myself driving straight down KY-52 South instead of I-75 South, straight into those hills, straight into their darkness. Around midnight, I got a message from my mom that my dad had been taken to the hospital and that his condition was serious. I immediately jumped out of bed and into my car despite my mom telling me to wait until morning to drive down. I lived up in Richmond at the time while my parents were down in Hazard. It's a little under a 2-hour drive via I-75 South and a little over 2 via Kentucky 52 South. That night, though, I-75 South was closed due to an overnight bridge reconstruction project, so I had to take Kentucky 52 southbound, and it goes through some pretty gnarly, bad country. I figured nothing would happen, that it'd be a smooth yet anxiety-ridden 2 hours trip, but there was this dread I couldn't shake boiling up in my gut, urging me to wait until morning. But I didn't. I couldn't. I had to see my dad. I got from Richmond to Irvine just fine, driving the winding road and hilly terrain with ease, going faster than the speed limit. It was from Irvine to Jackson that things took a turn for the worst. First off, it was dark. Really effing dark. And even with my brights on, they still only barely lit up the surrounding area. The constantly curving roads didn't help either. I found myself slowing down, having to navigate through the dark, around the switchbacks and turns, inclines and depressions, hoping to God I didn't run off the road or hit an oncoming vehicle. And the dread was at the forefront of everything now. Sure, it could have been exacerbated by worry for my dad, but there's something about those hills, something evil, and I was really effing afraid. The radio was dipping in and out, so I put in a CD and tried to drown out the fear with music. But after the first song, I turned off the stereo completely and drove in silence, all my senses on high alert. It felt wrong. It felt like I was being watched. Every so often, I would see a light flash in the woods, like a campfire, but brighter. And I swear at one point between Crystal and Beattyville, there was this pale and hairless and huge humanoid running after my car next to the road. I swear I saw it in the rearview mirror. It disappeared into the darkness in the trees when I braked and spun around in my seat. 30 minutes out of Beattyville, I saw a kid. He was wearing a yellow shirt, blue shorts, and a red jacket, a hoodie, colors that reminded me of Superman. He wasn't wearing shoes. That bothered me. I flicked my brights down to their normal strength and slowed to a crawl, wondering what the hell this kid, who looked to be under 10, was doing out in the middle of bumfuck nowhere. I made sure my doors were locked, cracked my window, and asked him if he was okay as I rolled towards him. He didn't respond. I glanced down at my phone. No service. Shit. I asked him if he was okay again, and he looked up at me quickly, making his hood fall down. He was crying. I slowed to a stop, and he immediately ran over, sticking dirty fingers into the crack of my window, pounding on the door. He was screaming something about how they were hunting him and that they were going to let the monster eat him, and they were watching us now, waiting just beyond the darkness. At this point, I was seriously freaking out, and I might have been screaming too. I tried to roll my window up while trying not to hurt the kid, but he wouldn't release his grip on my window. I think he was trying to break it. A bright light flashed onto us, and the kid screamed even louder, let go of my car, and began running down the road back towards Beattyville. And I'm ashamed to say I took off. I was afraid I was going to die and become another statistic of these hills. In my rearview mirror, I watched as what looked like 3 men in hooded robes run out onto the road. The spotlight one of them was holding was trained onto my car and hit the mirror at an angle that blinded me. But it looked like the other two were going after the kid. I blinked and looked back towards the road, speeding like a bat out of hell. I pulled off in Jackson and drove straight to the police station. Two detectives and an FBI agent who happened to be in town working with a liaison listened to me with grave faces. When I was finished, the FBI agent thanked me, then told me that a kid had gone missing the day before from a Bible camp near the Kentucky River. He said that's why he was in town in the first place. Apparently, the kid and his friends were out playing hide-and-seek in the woods in broad daylight when he just disappeared. He was wearing yellow, blue, and red like Superman. The strange thing is, his footsteps just stopped, and his shoes were still there. It was like he was lifted off the ground by air. It was weird. Half a dozen cop cars with twice as many cops, the agent, and a search and rescue team were dispatched to the area within minutes after me reporting what I'd seen. I drove to a local diner and ended up staying in Jackson until morning, making the 40-ish minute drive down to Hazard after the sun rose. After hearing why it took me so long to get down there, my mom was beside herself with panic, but was also glad I was okay, telling me I did what I had to do to survive, that I was brave and wasn't a coward. My dad ended up making a full recovery. If you're wondering if I do feel like an effing coward, if I regret not letting that kid into my car, the answer is a resounding yes. I do. I am. It haunts me to this day, but I don't know what would have happened if I'd stayed there any longer, and I don't know if either of us would have made it out alive. Next story comes from a wildland firefighter. Setting is the early 2000s, Hell's Canyon, an area of Middle Ohio. His crew had been working all day on an emerging incident and were going to be working through the night as well. Being the assistant superintendent of the crew, or second in charge, he was out ahead scouting on an ATV. He was working his way down a logging road that clearly had not been used in some time when a bobcat or a lynx appeared in the middle of the road, but didn't run away as it usually would. The thing stands there for a good 10 seconds, screamed at him, and scampered up a tree, not 5 feet off the road. He found this odd, but not particularly unsettling. Just a half mile or so down the road, he found a small cabin. Also odd, as this is federal land, and there's no private structures which are allowed to be there. Upon investigation, all the windows had been boarded shut tight, and someone had done a good job of doing it. The door now had been punched out and secured to a hole drilled into the log frame by a chain. Someone did not want anything or anyone getting in or out. Peering through the hole in the door, he saw that everything in the house was upset. This kind of unsettled him, so he hopped on his ATV, headed back up the road. Well, this is where it gets really interesting. Right where the bobcat had been, there stands a Native American woman in a badly tattered nightgown and bare feet, just standing there. He yelled at her, asking if she needed help. She just screamed at him, the same scream as the cat from before, and climbed right up the tree, faster than any human had a right to be climbing. Obviously, he got out of there as fast as he could, unsure of who or what he just saw. He asked a local guy about the cabin. After asking around a little, a local Native American heard them talking and informed them that they saw a pumawa, in effect, a skin changer, a warg. Some of you might find that hard to believe, but what other explanation could there be for that sighting? Next story. I've been a national park ranger for close to 2 decades. Protocols have changed a lot in that time, and I just want to let you know about this just to keep people safe for the next time you venture to the big outdoors. Let me tell you about the last park I worked at. I can't be too specific about the location for my job's sake. Anyway, we had clusters of campsites that we rotated annually. The idea was to prevent one group from getting overused and worn down and let nature regrow a little bit. The winter had just passed and our big summer season was a few months away. I was sent out to check the suitability of the campsites to decide which ones needed time to recover and which ones we could open up. Winters here are cold. Not too many people camp during the winter aside from rugged masochists and Boy Scout troops led by people who believe they are rugged masochists. I didn't expect to find much out of the ordinary. The first site was clear and ready to go. As I was trekking to the next site, I saw what looked like some debris and junk down a ways in a river valley. It looked like some jackass had set up an unauthorized camp down there. Usually when that happens, they leave garbage and smoldering fires. This was going to be a pain to clear up, I thought. I approached, and I saw the telltale wreckage of what must have been one hell of a party. Shit scattered everywhere. The skeletons of tents still raised up, and blood. I stopped, and time stopped with me. Pools of blood were spread out along the ground next to signs of something heavy being dragged into the brush. I pulled my radio off my belt and paused. I then pulled my Glock 22 out of my holster and racked one round. I'm a certified law enforcement officer, but I haven't had to use my gun in a long time. I quickly looked around for any movement, then got on the radio and called in for backup. Then while I waited, I listened. Silence. Silence in nature isn't good. Prey get quiet when they sense a predator. I hoped all the birds were being still on my account. I edged forward slowly, looking for anyone or anything. A shredded plastic cooler, a tent that had been annihilated with more blood splashed on the walls and inside. People died here. I knew it. You can't lose that much blood and just walk off. But no people. Shreds of clothes and a little viscera drawing all the goddamn flies here, but no people. I saw bears had been rummaging through the camp and destroyed anything that looked edible. There were wild hogs here that cut trails through the deep brush and are even more dangerous than the bears. But this isn't either of them. The devastation here, it's just too much. Some scourge of God came through here and just ripped everything to pieces. Finally, backup arrived, and I sent the report to HQ. They even brought medics out here. I don't know why. There's no one here to save. One of the new recruits vomited at the scene. I'm glad to get the hell out of there. I got back and HQ was abuzz. Only 4 people work here, but calls are ringing, printers printing, and the air feels electrified. The manager saw me and signaled me to his office. He's pale, ashen looking, with bloodshot eyes. I sat down by his desk and he went to the door and locked it. I've never seen him lock that door. He asked me what I saw, and I told him, uninterrupted. He looked even paler afterwards, and his hands trembled a bit. There was a very long pause, and I expected more questions, but he didn't ask any. I left. Then I heard the door lock behind me. After a few minutes, I heard him call someone up, and a long, low conversation ensued. And I never saw him again. Word came down from on high. We were assigned a new manager, one who excelled at what he called crisis. His first order of business, a controlled burn of the unauthorized camp and the site closest to it. I'm not arguing. I watched the smoke rise in the distance and prayed that that was the end of it. Then new orders came in. Relocate the existing campsites closer to HQ. Before we do that, we stake out a few trail cameras at the new locations just to make sure it's not in the middle of a nesting ground. We put up a few cameras pointed at the hog trails through the brush for good measure. A couple of days passed and we went out to collect the footage. The new manager took it all and started studying in his office. A couple of hours into reviewing, he freaked out, started screaming and yelling, got on the phone calling up the line, spewing more obscenities. He spent the rest of the day and that night in the office, calling up specialists and planners. Next morning, I showed up for a meeting. Manager doesn't look like he slept much. Massive changes afoot. He laid out our new plans, including massively bright lampposts circling the bark border, as well as floodlights around the ranger stations. Campsites needed to be moved even closer, clear lines of sight from the light if possible. I butted in, telling him that that defeats the point of going camping. If you're just going on a short walk through the grass and setting up so close you can see the parking lot. He told me to shut up, and that was just a start. The park now closes at sundown, sharp. Also, We're now required to have a long gun on our person at all times. Now, it isn't uncommon for Rangers to carry an AR-15 or Remington 870 shotgun going out into the deep woods. There are wild and rabid animals out there. The real concern are massive pot growers. These aren't your chill neighbors who hides a few plants behind the tomatoes. They run the spectrum from large-scale suppliers who like their privacy and dislike law enforcement to anti-government crazies who think we have no right over them. Both groups have a few common points. They tend to be well-armed, they do not like lawmen, and they won't shy away from taking a pot shot at some dumb poor ranger who finds himself in their fields. Keep in mind Elliot Ness, Mr. I fought Al Capone in one, got scared off busting up Appalachian moonshiners because they constantly sniped at him in the foothills. They shoot to kill. Those are the reasons we keep the big guns around, not routine patrols. I drew the short straw and got the overnight shift. Manager told me more changes to protocol would be listed when I returned. Overnights used to be easy. Monitor the radio, bust up the parties if needed, check for poachers if they're operating nearby, and make sure the forest doesn't burn down. I clocked in per instructions, and then I went to the gun cage. My things have changed. Our shotguns have new rifled barrels so they can handle the solid slugs we've been issued. That's the kind of firepower you want to take down a charging bear. God forbid you ever need it. The AR-15s have been stepped up too. The old 15-round magazines have been replaced by 30-round ones. Someone even snuck in hollow point rounds. Makes no damn sense. Shooting in the woods, you need full metal jacket ammo so the rounds don't go wild when they touch a twig. Hollow points just exist to do more tissue damage. This is ridiculous. This is overkill. We're not a war zone. We don't need this firepower. Next to the radio, there are new instructions. Now we're not allowed to directly respond to emergency calls. We can reply, figure out what the issue is, and then we report to a new phone number, which I don't recognize. Time passed slowly that night. I wasn't even allowed to leave the building until sunup. A few uneventful nights passed. The new floodlights and lampposts were frying my eyes. It was so bright out there a blind man could see. A week later, some kids rolled into the lot. They grabbed their backpacks and started hiking up the ridge. I know what they're up to. No one has booked a campsite that night. Cheap young ones going on a camp out that will be a raging party. I waited for the sun to go down, confirming they were not out for a day hike. I called my manager to report. He instructed me to call the new number. I reported up to them now. A curt voice answered the phone. He asked my park, then paused, and he asked the issue. Bunch of kids on an unauthorized site. Do I go break it up? I can see their campfire out on the ridge right now. No, do not leave the building. Do not attempt communication. That is all. Report if there are any developments. Right after daybreak, the manager rode up. It was really early. Have you seen them? Did they leave? No. The car's still there. Let them rest. They're probably all hungover. He cursed nonstop. He then went down inside to make a call. And I'm outside looking up the bridge when he leaves the station. One AR-15 in his hand, another one strapped across his back, a Glock on his hip. And he marched single-mindedly towards his car. I tried to ask him what in God's name he's doing, but he's not listening or responding. He takes a jerry can of gasoline from his car and marches up the ridge. I yelled after him. Got no reply. I considered following him, but that doesn't seem like a good idea. I went back inside and called the number. The same curt voice, the same direct questions. Yeah, the manager went up to that campsite, armed to the teeth and carrying gasoline. What the F do I do? Stay there. Do not interfere. Backup is inbound. Report if there are any developments. About the same time, I started to see smoke wafting off the ridge. Two vans rode into the lot at a screaming speed. A dozen men, heavily armed and armored, exited quickly. I went out to check. Who are you guys? What's going on? The men all lined up with that impeccable military position. One of them, a commander, I assume, exited the vehicle last, and he said, Which direction did he go? I mean, he's up there. I pointed at the increasing smoke. The man fanned out and started jogging up the ridge. I heard the rifles cocking as they left. I tried to shout after them, but got no response. I looked at the vans that they had come in. Large, nondescript. They just say DOI response team on the side. Half an hour later, they returned, dragging the manager with him. He was bound up with zip ties. And he screams, I did what needed to be done. Trust me. It's worse than they thought. We can't stop this. Burn it all. They threw him in the back and sedated him. The commander approached me. My neck hair bristled in cold fear. I need to see the office. All computers and anything with a hard drive is coming with me. He mentioned videotapes. I need those too. I unlocked the doors and they ransacked the place. Everything got taken. Printed reports from the last few years disappeared into those vans. The videotapes got bagged and held up by the commander himself. He studied the gun cage. Cute. You're out of your league, he scoffed. Finally, they found everything they looked for. And then the commander tells me, call the number. Tell them it's contained. You need a new superior. Also, don't talk about this to anyone. And they left. Just on cue, the fire brigade shows up, and a few news vans also show up. The fire is contained, the news report says. Rumors of missing campers are unsubstantiated at this time. Still, the rumors alone aren't enough to scare off this season's campers. The quick change-up of managers is chalked up to bureaucracy. The press dies down after a week or two. The new manager is very good at dealing with them. Thankfully, with no new campers and our now even shorter open hours, we can get more work done around here. Rebuilding the station took some time, and we just set up the new campsites. They're practically spitting distance from the station. Nothing dramatic happens for a few days, then on a whim, the manager tells us to set up some cameras around the station and the campsites. There's usually so much human activity around here. All you see are some raccoons, maybe the rare hungry bear. But we humored him and set them up all around. A couple of days passed. We collected the footage. I played poker with one of the rookies while the manager watched hours of footage of an empty but brilliantly illuminated parking lot. Then he got to the footage around the station. I heard screams coming from the office. We barged in, and he's stamping on the camera hard drives, gibbering things I can't understand, along the lines of, told me it was clean, safe, no recent activity, bullshit. Here, I'm not gonna do it. He barked at us to leave. Later, he made a call. The rookie went up to the door and listened. Rookie came back, reporting, yeah, he's demanding a transfer. Says they lied to him, something about they didn't do their jobs properly. He's not prepared or equipped here. Then I just heard the phone click and some sobbing. Hours later, my manager exited the office. His shoulders were slumped, defeated. We cut our hours even further, practically open on weekends only. We have a full staff ready these days, but a skeleton crew the rest of the time. Campers are required to check into one of the closest sites. No campsites, and they're told to leave. We are not authorized to leave the station after dark under any circumstances. In an emergency, do not call 911. Call the number and do exactly what they say. We drew straws to who would get overnight shifts. Why we needed to stay overnight if we can't do anything is beyond me. I asked the manager about it, and he just said that that was standard protocol, which was to have someone on hand to report any irregularities overnight. I have to work my overnight shift. I kept my phone close, the number dialed in, ready if I needed to call. And it was a bad night. I wound up pacing around with my shotgun, glancing into the bright floodlights, trying to see what was past them. And I hear crickets, and it relaxes me. Prey is quiet when predators are around. It is a long night. The next night, my manager draws a short straw. He seems resigned. In the end, we all have to take a turn. He brought the brightest damn tactical flashlight I've ever seen. Said he bought it just because he's afraid of the dark. He isn't really. He's afraid of the things in the dark. I got a phone call at 3 a.m. It was him. Get over here now and bring guns. What? You have a damn arsenal. Now! I swear to God, I fucked up. Oh man, I think they're attracted to the light. I called that number and all they said was backup would be here in the morning. Oh, God damn it. I heard the piercing staccato of gunshots, a pause, more gunshots, screaming, scuffling, and the line went dead. I called the number. A new terse voice answers. Look, I just spoke with, what can you report? Something bad happened. It's serious. I heard gunshots. We will have backup there as soon as possible. Did he say anything else? Yeah, he said he thought that they were attracted to the light. Doesn't make sense to me. Interesting. Thank you for your report. The park is now closed. You will be reassigned. Goodbye. Click. Officially, the park was closed to be scheduled for a controlled burn. Let the old trees die and make room for new ones. There was nothing in the official report about what happened to the manager on duty. The public understanding was bureaucracies need to be shaken up on occasion, and no one asked any questions. I got transferred to a new park, halfway across the country. Change of scenery, it's beautiful. And they've got some odd rules here, too. Don't go far after dark, and don't carry a flashlight. I'm concerned about why. Why can't you use a flashlight at night when you need one? They won't tell me. Be safe, everyone.